His psychic punch wasn't all that dissimilar from David's blast. However, Salem didn't wait for an opening as David had. He didn't have David's patience. Instead, violence lover Salem repeatedly tried penetrating my shield. Ballsy, but stupid. The psychic punch ricocheted both times, and he narrowly avoided it, cursing, "Fucker!" at the punch each time. His fumbling around gave me the opening I needed, and pretty soon a gush of water sent him sliding backwards toward the wall. He didn't care. The adrenaline was pumping, so he was happy. Learning from his mistake, however, he took a leaf out of David's book and waited for his chance. Soon enough, he got his opening. My shield protected me, of course, or I'd have been unconscious on the floor. Damien did a lot better at the task than I'd been expecting. He peeped out one side, then the other, and then above. But it turns out that he was tricking the shit out of me. In fact, it was his astral self that had peeped out, meaning that his physical body was safe and sound. If he did that during an attack, he could keep his body safe while still baiting the enemy. Next was Chico. As his aim still needed to be improved on, he couldn't emit the thorns from his hands without actually having a visual of where I was. It took a few tries, but he eventually got his opening. Again, my shield came in handy. He wasn't too pleased when I used a teensy bit of fire to singe his mustache, but it served to make him concentrate better on me, rather than on the fact that everyone was watching him. His fear was exhibiting weakness, because he was kind of like the alpha of the squad. I could empathize slightly. Denny farted some musk at me, the sod, so I zapped his butt with an energy blast. After that, he decided that taking his eyes off me was a bad idea, and took to becoming mush every time I attacked. This aggravated me, though, because he wasn't using his full potential. He needed to realize that attacking was just as important as defending, so I sent his mushy form swirling around, using a nice gush of water. He got the point that being mush wouldn't necessarily protect him, and then began spraying ooze at me. As Reuben's gift depended on physical contact, I allowed him to leave his boulder and try to reach me. Even with my taking it easy on him, he didn't get the hang of it, because he was too busy concentrating on dodging my gifts to concentrate on my movements and preempt where I was going. As he believed that it wasn't possible for him to preempt me and reach me, I absorbed some of his energy to temporarily give me his gift. I then had Denny repeatedly spray ooze at me so that I could show Reuben how focusing on an enemy's movements would both help him preempt their movements and notice when an enemy was about to attack with their gift. It took under 30 seconds for me to physically touch Denny, which made Reuben more optimistic. I also suggested that maybe he could tie back his lovely brown shoulder-length hair so it did not disturb his vision. Butch did well with negating anything I flung at him. But when he got a little cocky and kept flashing that crooked grin of his, challenging me with those unbelievably dark eyes, I put more force behind one of my fire blasts to illustrate to him that he couldn't negate everything and would need to learn to bring up his shield better. We had practiced this last session, but Butch had only managed to do it once. Not because he wasn't a capable person or in very good control of his gift, but because Butch was only just getting used to the idea that he could use his defensive negating power in different ways. Max was absolutely delighted when I called him up. He was extremely chuffed with his gift and kept promising me that one day he'd rob me of my senses and then kiss me hard, to which he received a small punch in the gut. Each time I felt him reaching out, I popped my shield up. However, I was impressed by how well he was able to dodge my gift. His agility had dramatically improved, which he owed to Jared's training. God, Jared! I hadn't once forgotten that he was up there. I couldn't. Not when those eyes were drilling into me. I daren't look up at him in case my brain shut off for a second. That's what it felt like would happen if we made proper eye contact for the first time in days. Out of all the recruits, Stuart was the least enthusiastic, mainly because he was still sore about not being able to do much else other than shred. He was sometimes able to explode into molecules before my gift hit him, but the almost part pissed him off, as did the fact that he was finding it extremely difficult to move from place to place as molecules. but he did move a step. Progress. You all did good, I told them. Good enough to move on to the second exercise. I'm going to ask you all to line up. 5 of you against the eastern wall, the other 5 at the western wall. I want at least 3 car spaces between each of you. Yes, coach, was said in unison. Without delay, they found themselves a spot. Chico, Butch, David, Denny and Stuart lined up against the eastern wall, while the others stood against the western wall. Damien was facing Chico, Salem was facing Butch, Reuben was facing David, Harvey was facing Denny, and Max was facing Stuart. Pacing between the lines of blokes, I spoke. Take a good look at who's opposite you. Remember everything you can about their gifts, because in a moment those gifts will be heading right at you. As I'd anticipated, there was some discomfort in the lines. I never set them against each other before. I'll shout your names individually. As soon as you hear it, I want you to do your thing, and I want you to do it fast. Because that's what it will be like out there. Me barking your name or an order, and you acting without hesitation. If you panic now, if you buckle under this pressure, then you know you've got some learning left to do. Do not turn this into a spar. Only when I shout your name do you act. Those who have a gift coming at you, block it if you can or dodge it. But do not retaliate. That all understood? Yes, coach. Turning and pacing back the way I'd come, I added, you'll remember that your second goal was to memorize as much as you can about the gifts of the rest of your squad. This exercise should also give you an idea of just how near or far you are to that goal. Right, first I need Reuben to weaken Max, Chico and Salem's powers. Coach, obeyed Reuben. He touched each of them for only 3 seconds. Then his face twisted in confusion. Coach, what about David? Well, David's who you're facing in the lineup. You'll get your chance to weaken him when I call you, but you're going to need to do it in quicker than 3 seconds. An enemy won't let you hold onto their shoulder and wait. For anyone who can move at vampire speed, 3 seconds is more like 10. Coach, he said, bowing his head, before then scooting back to his spot. Once I was back at my own spot against the northern wall, I let a moment of silence drag on. This served 2 purposes. 1, it created a hint of the suspense that they could expect during an attack. And 2, my call would sound exceptionally loud against the heavy silence. While some of them stood tall and still, others shuffled their weight from foot to foot, and others were repeatedly clenching their hands. I was terribly proud to see that each and every one of them was doing the one thing that I'd instructed them to in past sessions. They were keeping their eyes on their opponent. Chico! At the sound of his name, Chico abruptly lifted one hand and shot out several thorns from his palm. They embedded themselves in Damien's chest, which would have had him cry out in pain at the sting, had he not astral projected a few feet away in less than the time it took to blink. A handy way to dodge. Without missing a beat, I called out, Salem! Fixed where he stood, the blonde vampire threw an uppercut toward Butch. I could see the ripple in the air that the psychic energy had produced as it flew from Salem. More determined than I'd ever seen him, Butch placed his hands in front of his chest, palms out. The effect was like watching the sun shine on glass. The boom hit the flat glass-like shield and collapsed to the ground. Harvey! Wearing a cocky grin, Harvey made a quick movement that resembled someone throwing a small ball upwards. I guessed he intended on sending Denny levitating upwards. Before the impact could hit Denny, he instantly liquidized into green mush. 2 seconds later, he was himself again. Harvey made an animal tsk noise in frustration. Max! He always wore the same tough bloke expression when he was reaching out to paralyze someone's senses. His eyes would narrow, his mouth would twist, and his eyebrows would dip. With the simple gesture of closing his open hand, he attempted to temporarily quash Stuart's senses. But Stuart had literally exploded into molecules. Nice dodging. Reassembling quickly, he flashed Max a smug grin. Reuben! Oh, good old Rube was nervous. I would be too if I knew that David's power would shortly be heading for me. God, that bloke was fast. Vampire speed had him at David in under a second. He touched his shoulder briefly before returning to his spot. David! David, standing tall and determined, exhaled heavily and splayed his fingers. The blast rushed toward Reuben, who was frozen. There was simply no way to dodge David's gift. Every one of us watched intently, hoping that Reuben had successfully weakened it enough for the impact to feel merely like a thump over the head. If Reuben hadn't weakened it enough, he'd end up unconscious. If he had accidentally strengthened the blast, he would die. I think all of us released a brief sigh of relief when Reuben simply flinched and brought his hand to his head. I didn't give them time to celebrate, though. Stuart! This was a big test for Stuart. I watched as he stiffened, and then, like before, exploded. I continued to watch as the molecules rushed toward the vampire opposite him. Max jerked backwards as Stuart, in under a second, reassembled in front of him. "Hi there," he said to Max, winking. He had every reason to be chuffed with himself. "Denny!" I wondered if Denny might use his anal musk on Harvey. It wasn't that he didn't like him, but Harvey picked on David a lot, who happened to be Denny's best friend. Instead, Denny flexed his hands, making them appear more like claws, and then sprayed yellowy-green ooze from his thumbs and little fingers. The times when he attacked were the only moments that his baby face looked, in any way, threatening. The ooze was sturdy and stringy, wrapping around Harvey like a web, in spite of his telekinetic efforts to divert it. There was just too much of it. Denny's dimply smile surfaced instantly. "Butch!" Knowing what I wanted him to do, Butch placed his hands in front of his chest, palms out in the same way that he had before. This time, instead of leaving them there, he forcefully extended his arms in front of him and spread them to the side, pushing his invisible shield outwards and surrounding himself with it. "Chico, David, Salem, get him now!" Thorns, a psionic blast, and a psychic punch came at Butch from different directions, but all of it hit the shield. Last but not least, "Damien!" I was very surprised when he didn't hesitate or lick his lips nervously. This was the first time I had seen him sure of himself. He blinked hard, and then, suddenly, his astral self was lounging on the floor in front of Chico, chuckling. With that, the eyes of every recruit concentrated on me, all of them keen to jump for joy, but desperately wanting my approval first. I made them sweat by keeping silent a few seconds. "Now you can do a sing and a dance," I said with a smile. They practically did. Some bounced on the spot, arms shot up toward the sky, and I heard plenty of celebratory noises. Then they were all heading toward me. "Oh, no, you don't," I warned them, one finger pointed at them. They appeared to be ignoring it, however, as they were still coming at me. "Don't you dare!" Too late. I was scooped up by Reuben and hung over his shoulder while he bounced. "This is a bit dramatic." I ended up with some of Denny's ooze that had been dripping from Harvey now in my hair. Not so happy about that. I heard cheering and clapping from the spectators' box. I looked up. Evan was smiling and clapping. He was also alone. "I don't know what to say," Evan said as he reached me, and we began a slow walk out of the arena. The recruits were still celebrating their glory further on ahead of us, heading to their apartment block by the looks of things. "You could say something flattering," I suggested lightheartedly. I never expected them to be in such control. It took my squad a long time before they reached that point. Don't take that the wrong way. I'm not saying that I didn't think you were capable." I interrupted before he tripped over his words. "It's all right. I know what you're trying to say." "I've got to ask. You've been around my squad, right? Did you pick up any excess energy around them?" I bit my bottom lip. "Yeah," I finally admitted. "And there's a little around you too, if I'm honest."
"Really?"
He looked mortified, though he was smiling.
"I guess you'll have to give me and my squad a lesson sometime. You know, you're a good coach. I take it you had a good coach to pick that up from."
My smile faded. "Not exactly. So did Jared decide not to stay and watch?"
"He stayed to the end, but then scampered pretty quickly. Said he had somewhere to be." His tone suggested he hadn't believed that excuse. Have you two had a falling out or something? Jared and I have never had a friendship to fall out of. Even our business relationship is beyond strained. Antonio employing me hurt his ego. You must know how your brother cherishes that ego. There was silence for a moment. I don't think it's just that. You mean the fact that I wouldn't let him screw me, as you so aptly put it during your telepathic conversation with him? His cheeks reddened. I can't believe you heard that. Jared said absorbing some of his energy must have made you tune into it. He wouldn't say much about the absorbing his energy part. His tone was probing. There's nothing to tell. I was in a bad way after killing Victor, and Jared let me absorb some of his energy. I shrugged, as if to emphasize the simplicity of it all. Well, that confirms my suspicions. Suspicions? Jared doesn't give anyone anything, let alone his energy. Like I said before, I don't think his problem is just a wounded ego. I think he likes you. A lot, actually. I gave him a doubtful look. I failed to see how you could make that conclusion when he barely speaks or looks at me. He asked me to join his consort collection, yeah, but that's just about sex. He's been sulking ever since I said no. Evan pointed a finger at me. But see, that's the thing with Jared. Although he thought he had at one time, he's never truly liked a woman in more than a physical sense, so he doesn't know how to handle it. He just knows that he wants you, and he probably thinks that if he screws you, it'll all make sense. So you're attuned to him, are you? I mocked playfully. When we were human, we were really close. There wasn't a part of his life that I didn't know about, and vice versa. We did almost everything together. What changed? Jared. He didn't say it with bitterness or even disappointment, but understanding. As soon as he was made heir, he totally changed. He loved the attention, the respect, the rewards, and the power that came with it all. So he forgot about you, kind of left you behind. Oh no, nothing like that. He wanted me to live the high life with him. He had the power to give it to me, he had the girls to share, but I wasn't interested. He never took it personally, he respected that I didn't want that kind of life, even though he didn't understand why. You are a bit of an enigma. I am? He sounded amused. I get that power and attention isn't what you feel you need in life, but everybody feels that they need something, little or big, and yet you just plod along but always smiling. Even though you've never been short of offers from women, you've turned them down. Although I'm told that in the very beginning, you're almost as bad as Jared. I've never once seen you even harmlessly flirt with anyone. Should I assume that there was a woman from your human life who you can't forget? He smiled, scrutinizing my face. I got the idea that he was wondering how much or how little to say on the subject, whether or not he could trust me. I tried to assure him with my smile that he could. Finally, he made a puffing sound and sat down on the lawn outside the rear of the mansion. You know Luther has visions, right? He asked. I nodded and sat beside him. Has Antonio ever asked you if you wanted to have one via Luther? Yeah. I didn't understand it, though. In mine, I was in the rainforest, and I was waiting really anxiously for someone, worried they were in danger. Then Jared and two women appeared, and I almost collapsed in relief. One of them had blazing red hair and pale blue eyes, and the most amazing smile you've ever seen. My emotions in the vision weren't very clear, but I could feel that she was mine. Since then, I couldn't bring myself to be with another woman. It would have felt like I was being unfaithful. That might sound weird. No. No, it doesn't at all. You're waiting for her. It's really sweet. After time just kept dragging on and she never showed, I was starting to think that maybe she was never going to. That maybe I'd made some sort of decision somewhere along the line that had changed the future. But then you came, and you can't imagine how much optimism flowed through me. What do you mean? You were the other woman in my vision. You and Jared brought her to me. My eyebrows jumped up. Oh. He laughed. Yeah, oh. Well, I really didn't know how I felt about that. Spooked, he asked, amused. Sort of. You've never told Jared about her, I realized. He wouldn't understand. He was so close to Jared and yet so far apart. It made me sad. I knew that if I told him, he'd laugh about it and say she must be a really good screw for me to feel that way. I didn't want to hear that. I didn't want him to taint it. Don't worry. I'm not going to tell him or anyone else. I know. It was said with utter confidence and trust. You know that Jared's a little unhappy about how much we talk and stuff, don't you? My guess is he's worried you'll manage to get in my pants when he couldn't. That would be a huge blow to his ego. Evan laughed. Yeah, it certainly would. But I've never once felt like you were coming on to me. In my vision, I could feel that I was relieved you were okay, that I cared about you just like a sister, the sister I never had. And I do, already. And I think of you as a brother. His expression was so cheery. I guess that hearing me say I felt that way was making everything click into place for him, giving him even more optimism that his girl would soon be in his life. You didn't say the brother you never had. So you had a brother? Any sisters? Nope. My mum and dad were workaholics, totally obsessed with the business they ran that didn't even make any money. They barely had time for me, let alone any other kids. I was a big disappointment to them, because I wasn't driven to follow in their footsteps and join the crappy family business. I have to say, though, it seems like an appealing future now, but no sense in dwelling. Hey, you've done okay for yourself in your new life. So far you've got the big job, the flashy apartment, the hefty salary. All that's missing is the husband. Anyone wanting to be your husband would either have to be incredibly turned on by being challenged, or quite content to be submissive in every way.
The latter wouldn't be interesting.
Well, I know of one person who fits the first.
Say your brother's name and I'll whip you senseless.
I was going to say Max, he laughed. I'm not going to root for Jared when I know what he wants is for you to be a consort. You're better than that.
That's what I said. It was nice to hear someone tell me that there had been reason and rhyme to my choice. After the way Jared had overreacted, I had occasionally wondered if I was being fussy or stupid, because whether I was his consort or just a casual shag, the result was still the same, sex and nothing else. Of course, Fletcher had supported my position, but he also believed that I needed a good one-off shag to burn off all the aggression and horniness. As such, he wasn't all that bothered who that shag was, even if it was Jared. If Jared's own brother thought he was being idiotic, then maybe I wasn't being as harsh as Jared thought. Chapter 9. Sam. The hammering at my apartment door switched my posture to confrontational. I could only think of one person who would be so pissed off with me that he would knock like the rent man. But when I swung the door open, my face a mask of aggravation, I was met with a scene that I would never have guessed at.
"Coach!" crooned Denny.
"Hi," greeted Stuart.
"I was kinda hoping we'd got you at a bad time. Like, a naked time."
"Typical Harvey." Max dug an elbow into Harvey's ribs, who grunted.
"What are you all doing here?" I asked.
"Coming to get you," said Max, as if it was obvious. "All of us are going down to the Barcelona bar, and you're coming with us."
"Isn't the Barcelona a men-only bar?"
"Tonight was a big achievement for us, and we couldn't have done it without all your training. We're going out to celebrate. You're our coach, and so you're coming with us."
Max had said it like it was a mathematical equation. "I'm not sure whether I should be offended that you see me as one of the boys."
"Don't tell us you don't want to get out of this apartment for one night," said Denny.
"We can always carry you there."
Max let the idea taunt me.
"You wouldn't dare," I said.
Max arched a brow.
"Wouldn't I? I've told you before, you have your authority during training, but when we're on our time, it means squat."
He made a move toward me.
"Okay, okay, I'll go," I said quickly.
Max gave me a curious look, as if he couldn't understand why I'd caved so easily. The answer? I was naked under my nightgown. Not that I thought Max would cart me all the way to the bar in just my nightgown, but he would certainly pick me up just to prove the point that he was willing to do that if push came to shove. So I got dressed. I didn't put much thought into it, really. I just stepped into the black halter-neck dress and the matching shoes that Fletcher had picked, and then slipped on some fashion jewelry. With my hair left loose, I stepped out into the hallway. All of the squad were stood waiting. Each one stared and swallowed hard. Poor buggers didn't have many female vampires around them on a regular basis. I couldn't really understand why they wanted to go to an all-male bar, as I'd always thought that part of the fun for blokes was to get themselves a girl. Denny explained that the drinks were cheapest at that bar, so they always went there first to get hammered, and then they'd move on to the unisex bars. I didn't have any trouble getting in the bar. One look at my cleavage and the sound of the word coach, and the fact that I was female, faded into non-existence for the doorman. The inside was actually all right. It looked more like a club with its strobe lights, packed dance floor and booming music. Despite it being chocker, it was easy enough to get a drink since the bar was eternally long. Max stayed close, a hand always on my elbow or my back. Chico repeatedly rolled his eyes at the sight, as if Max was trying too hard and making himself look desperate. I didn't see it that way. Max was trying hard, sure, but what he was trying hard at was to show me that there could be a completely different relationship between us outside of work hours, that it wouldn't make anything awkward. I wasn't sure if the fact that I didn't want anything more than casual sex would be a letdown for him or the biggest turn-on ever. I wasn't sure if I wanted to find out. I was overjoyed when I came across Fletcher and Norm. Tonight they'd been again colourful in their choice of clothes. Fletcher hugged me tightly. "How the bleeding hell did you get in here? It's men only. Me and Norm just about get in." "How do you think I got in?" I gave my boobs a little push. Fletcher laughed. "I told you a bit of cleavage works wonders, didn't I?"
"It certainly works for me," said a voice into my ear.
"Max."
"Hey, coach," sang another voice.
Evan. He assessed the dress and frowned playfully, giving me the big brother look.
"I should send you home to get some clothes on." "Oh, I beg you not to do that," said Harvey. "The view is perfect."
Evan shot him a warning look.
"Note that she is much too good for you."
"Harvey's right, though. She looks absolutely gorgeous," said Fletcher. "The only girl who has ever tempted me to go straight."
Max ushered me closer, but I shrugged him off.
"Sorry, slaphead, but I'm going."
"Where?"
he asked, deflating. "To the dance floor, of course. And anyone here who isn't on that dance floor won't see me all night."
"Don't think you're leaving me behind," said Fletcher.
At first, I was surprised that the entire squad came to the dance floor with me. But after a while, I realized it was because I was getting approached by a lot of blokes, since I was the only female in there. Evan's warning gaze served as a great deterrent to the would-be drink-offering blokes as well. I was dancing with Max when Evan spoke down my ear.
"You probably won't be pleased to know that Jared's here."
My heart did a little jump at the sound of his name. Maybe it was faulty.
"I don't care. He can go where he pleases. It's nothing to do with me."
"Do you realize that that's near enough the same thing he said to me telepathically that night when you eavesdropped?"
I spun on my heel, giggling but offended.
"I did not eavesdrop."
In truth, I hadn't turned so that I could jokingly confront Evan. I wanted to get an idea of where Jared was. My senses reached out, alerting me that he was somewhere to my right near the bar, and not happy.
"I was just letting you know he's here."
I knew what he meant. Be aware that Jared's here, and tone it down with Max, or Jared might snap. I'd have disagreed, but Jared had told me telepathically that I'd saved Max's life by saying no to him, though I never really understood why he was so mental over a bonk.
"Look," began Evan, "maybe you should pretend you're going to the bar for a drink and let him approach you."
"Why would I do that?"
"Because I can feel that he's riled."
So could I. That was the thing that got to me. I shouldn't be able to sense his emotions so well.
"It's not my fault that Antonio wants me to lead the squad alongside Jared. I told Antonio I didn't want to. He made it clear that it was an order."
So let Jared approach you. Let him bring it up and then tell him that. Let him get it off his chest.
Why should I reassure the plonker?
Evan sighed.
Please, Sam. He very rarely called me that.
Yeah, he's a pain in the ass sometimes, but he's also my twin brother. Maybe once he's got it off his chest, you two can start behaving civilly to each other again. You know, like grown-ups do.
I couldn't help smiling at that. I supposed it wasn't very mature to snub your colleague when you have to see them and work with them every day. Plus, if we didn't somehow sort this out, how would we ever successfully lead the squad together? How could we ever protect the Hollow the way we were required to?
Evan kissed my cheek when I sighed in defeat. I then left it to Evan to keep Max out of the way while we tested this theory that Jared had something to say. As Evan suggested, I went to the bar and ordered a drink. I then leaned my back against the bar, as if having a brief rest, and kept my gaze forward as I sipped on the red grape NST. Only moments later, I felt Jared approaching. Felt his eyes, felt his annoyance, and God, that scent.
I never thought you'd manage to pass as a guy.
His humor didn't disguise his irritation very well.
I never thought you'd manage to gain entry either, considering you have to be an adult. Sulking is more a toddler thing.
I heard him take a long breath. It pleasantly tickled my skin as he exhaled.
The squad was impressive at the arena.
There was a slight emphasis on the word squad, the interpretation being that he believed it was them that deserved the glory, not me. I didn't rise to that. The fact was they had been impressive, and they wouldn't have been unless they had listened well and tried hard. I was proud of them, and I wouldn't take that away from them.
I've noticed that they're improving physically, too, I said.
Especially Max. You're obviously training them right. He hissed slightly on hearing Max's name.
You sound surprised that I am.
I hadn't sounded surprised at all. My tone had been completely flat. I realized then that he was trying to get an argument out of me.
Oh, he wanted to get things off his chest all right, but he wanted to argue while he did it.
Antonio thinks highly of you, so why would I be surprised?
Antonio thinks highly of you, but I was surprised tonight.
Like you said, the squad was impressive. Another long, heavy breath.
Look at me.
It was said softly. So I looked at him, and as I'd earlier expected might happen, my brain clapped out for a second. It had felt like so long since we'd actually properly made eye contact. He was doing his shameless staring thing again. I didn't look away this time, but I couldn't help that my pulse was racing madly.
Antonio must have told you that he wants you to help me lead the squad when the Hollow is attacked.
I nodded.
He did.
But you never brought it up. I thought you'd have been dying to throw it into conversation and tease me about it.
Then you don't know me very well. I had taken it as Antonio thinking I was good at what I did, not that he thought that Jared was crap.
So tell me why you didn't bring it up.
We weren't exactly having conversations that anything could have been brought up in. And besides, I had a pretty good idea of how that conversation would go, especially since Antonio had admitted that you weren't happy about it.
I don't think I need you as co-leader.
Ooh, now that's a shocker right there, I said sarcastically. Antonio ordered it. It's out of my control. You can confront me, or sulk, or whatever else, but none of it will change that. Talk to Antonio. I looked away from him again.
Why is it you can't seem to look at me for long without squirming or turning away? He said tauntingly. Surely you're not feeling self-conscious.
His tone dared me to object. My peripheral vision alerted me to the fact that he had taken a slow step toward me, leaving only one step between us. I watched as his eyes drifted to my lips a few times. Yes, I'll admit my libido thought this was great, and I was tempted to give his lips a look or two, or even a kiss or two. I was also tempted to put more space between us. I did neither.
Trying to aggravate Max, are you?
No doubt he was glaring at us.
I don't give a shit about Max.
He said it in a way that implied that there was something else he gave a shit about.
So then you just want to make me feel uncomfortable. You want to aggravate me. Come as close as you want, it won't work.
He did come closer, which I hadn't actually expected him to do. My body was now pining for him, aching even more because he was close enough to touch, and I was doing nothing about it. He looked pleased with himself, so I gathered he'd picked up on it, maybe by the fact that I'd stiffened a little and clenched my fists.
So, you were saying it won't work?
I turned so that I was facing him, and covered a little of the space left between us.
Oh, he was taken aback.
Good. My tone and posture and expression were all confrontational. I can't work out what I did that's pissed you off this much. You certainly want to get me just as riled as you are, and you're wasting no time at all in doing it. Just tell me, Jared. I placed my face even closer to his. Be a big boy and tell me what it is that's really making you be a prick. His irises began to glow red, but he didn't look angry.
Don't push me, Sam, or I swear to God I'll kiss you right here, right now, with everyone around to watch, and we both know you won't stop me.
Why did disputing get this bloke horny?
I won't stop you.
I probably wouldn't, actually. I doubted I'd be able to. As soon as his lips touched mine, the same thing always happened. Fire.
No.
His eyes dropped to my lips again.
And I seriously doubt that your boyfriend will like it. Does he know we've kissed before? Twice?
What's up, Jared? Worried one of your recruits might just get to shag me while you can't? That's a worryingly big ego you have there. I demolished the remainder of my NST, plonked the empty bottle on the bar, and went to walk away. His hand seized my wrist. His grip was possessive, and my traitorous body sort of liked it.
I'm not finished.
Take your hand off me or I'll snap it off, he snorted.
I'm not hurting you. You probably like it.
Plonker.
I want you to stop leading my brother on.
All right, that was the last thing I had expected to hear, hence why my response was, say again.
Evan's not like me.
Too right he wasn't. That was why Evan and I got along so well.
When he likes a woman, he wants the whole thing. Seeing as you're not interested in a relationship with anyone, all you're doing is leading him on.
You think your brother and me are interested in each other? His jaw went tight.
Don't be cute with me, Sam. It's obvious with the amount of time you spend with him.
You should try it sometime.
Meaning what, exactly?
Meaning that he's your brother, your twin, and you're barely a part of his life.
I know more about what's going on in his life than you do. I don't need advice about my brother from you, all right? Now stop trying to change the subject. I won't watch while you lead him on, not when he likes you.
I half snorted, half chuckled. Do you know that what you've just said adds further support to the argument that you don't know anything about what goes on in his life? I went to walk away again, but although I'd tugged hard to free my wrist, he'd tugged harder to keep it. He was speaking so close to my ear that he was almost nibbling on it.
You can wander off back to Max and Evan, but we both know that you don't really want either of them. You think that's fair to Evan? Or to Max? I wonder what they'd think if they knew about our little encounters.
I snickered and faced him again. If you honestly thought that having this little info that we'd kissed gave you some power, then you're thick as pig shit. It gives you nothing. Just because I haven't told them doesn't mean I care if they know. If you really want to find out what Evan and Max would think, go ahead and tell them. Better still, we'll go together. I grabbed his free hand with mine and pulled. Come on, let's see what they say. I could almost sense Jared's ego screaming at him not to back down. Jared eventually listened to it. Typical. He released my seized wrist and allowed me to pull him with my other hand to the dance floor, where Max and Evan stood amongst the rest of the squad. Fletcher and Norm.
Hey, greeted Evan, smiling. Everything sorted between you two now?
What was all that about?
Max asked me discreetly. I looked to Jared, daring him to tell them, totally unconcerned if they knew.
I can't have my bro and my honorary little sister fighting, said Evan, ruffling my hair exactly like a brother would.
Jared's expression suddenly changed. His eyes danced between Evan and me, studying us, as if truly seeing us together for the first time. Realization of the truth seemed to hit him, and then he nodded.
It's sorted.
His smile faded slightly when his glance slid to Max. Max, being Max, moved slightly closer to me and grinned at Jared sort of evilly. Then he said to me,
I thought I saw him grab you.
Jared, having heard, laughed.
You don't need to worry. I'd never hurt her. We just like to play rough, don't we?
I would have responded with a sour scowl, but his crooked smile just made me want to laugh. Evan seemed amused, too.
Getting my ass kicked by Sam is my idea of foreplay, and she's very good at foreplay.
Jared might have thought he was being clever, but he'd misjudged Max. Rather than being discouraged, Max attached himself to me. Any closer and he'd have passed for my Siamese twin. At first, Jared had seemed agitated by it, but then he took to repeatedly saying things down my ear. Inconsequential things that could have even been said telepathically, but it was all part of winding Max up. It seemed that Jared was intent on making Max either storm off in frustration or snap. He did neither. The more something became a challenge for Max, the more he wanted it. They weren't actually all that different. Chico had been watching Max cling to me all night and got increasingly annoyed about it, to the point where he came over and said something to Max about needing his help with an extremely drunk Butch. Being the good friend that he was, Max left my side to help with Butch. A little hesitant, but still he went. Chico winked and nodded at me. I gave him an appreciative smile. It was nice to have some breathing room.
"Here's my darling girl," said Fletcher as he approached with Norm.
Standing behind me and holding onto my shoulders, he asked,
"So, who will you be shagging tonight?"
I almost choked on my drink.
"Say again."
"Oh, come on. You can't tell me you're not horned up to death. I can sense it coming off you like fumes." "Max will definitely be up for it," said Norm.
Fletcher nodded.
"The way he's glued his body to you all night, he practically has shagged you." "Sam's got a complex about being someone's consort," said Jared, not seeming to like the topic of conversation. "Doesn't mean she can't have one of her own," insisted Fletcher with a giggle.
He squeezed my shoulders.
"Or just a nice jump to keep you going for another week."
A jump with Max sounded good to my body, but not good enough. It completely ached for someone else. However, with Jared not being an option, that meant a night with Max was on the cards. Why did the idea of it make me feel off inside? "I need alcohol," I told Fletcher. "None of these alcohol-flavored NSTs. I need real alcohol."
"Good idea," he said. "It'll settle your body a bit, and then you won't end up assaulting the bloke."
Fletcher patted my upper arm and then disappeared, returning seconds later with one gorgeous, muscled, brown-haired human who had several teeth marks in him. Drinking blood from intoxicated people was how we vampires got drunk.
"Here we are."
The bloke looked at me and grinned.
"A Svante. I haven't been bitten by a Svante in years. I'm gonna enjoy this."
Well, of course he would. Our saliva did a good job of getting our prey all hot and bothered, and could make them orgasm on the spot if we drank from them for more than 10 seconds.
"You'll have to hold my hand still," he told me, high on anticipation. "Why?" snorted Jared. "Because it's that good. I'll end up fondling her if she doesn't. I'm used to getting bitten and standing the pleasure, but when it's a Svante bite, there's no way of keeping still."
I grabbed his hands and held them firmly behind his back. I was more or less embracing him. Although some vampires were content to drink from the same bite mark that others had made, I wasn't. It was like sharing a cup that had been passed around a load of strangers. Not for me, thanks. As I ran my lips down the curve of his neck, he shuddered. Content with a certain spot on his neck, I paused. A vampire bite was a lot like a kiss. There were different styles. For instance, there was the firm bite, clamping the eye teeth abruptly down and making the suction fast, hard and greedy. Then there was the softer approach, tenderly popping the skin with the tips of the eye teeth, and then feeling the blood rush into your mouth, keeping the suction gentle and slow. Of course, there was also a bite that was somewhere between the firm and the soft style that some vampires preferred to do. My personal favourite was a style I'd developed myself. First, I nicked the skin with my eye teeth, which tickled the human, and then I lapped up any blood that surfaced. It was more or less teasing, but Svente's were like that. Then I always did a double bite, letting one of my eye teeth pierce the skin slightly first, and then sliding them both down into the neck. When I nicked his neck, the human instantly quivered. Then he felt the double bite and moaned in pleasure. I hadn't even started sucking yet. When I did, gulping slow but taking long pulls, his arm strained against my hold, and he tried grinding against me. I had to ensure to keep it shorter than 10 seconds, or else I'd probably make him come in his pants. Something that wouldn't be great for either of us. Not right here, right now, anyway. Opening my eyes as I began to draw back from him, I noticed that Jared was watching intently. The human wasn't so easy to shake off, so Evan and Jared helped. He shook his head, as if clearing his foggy thoughts, and smiled.
"It's on the house. I'll come back later."
I returned his smile. "You do that." When I turned my focus back to the vampires around me, I found 4 sets of eyes fixed on me, 2 glinting red and 2 glinting amber.
"What?"
Fletcher swallowed hard, then said to Norm,
"Now I'm even more curious."
The others nodded, and suddenly I understood. "None of you have ever been bitten by a Svente?"
"Oh, come on, you can't be serious." "You're a Svente, so you traveled in Svente circles. None of us did," explained Evan.
"There has to be some Sventes here."
"Only a few," said Fletcher. "Antonio and Luther have them as consorts."
The curiosity was still shining from their eyes. Their mouths were twisting to the side, and they seemed to be debating whether to say something, looking to each other for cues.
"You want me to bite you?" I asked all of them.
Their smiles and arched brows all said, "Hell yes."
"You can all sod off. I'm not biting any of you."
"Why not?"
whined Fletcher.
"Because it would turn you all on."
"That's why we want you to do it," said Norm, sounding horny already.
I grimaced. "I am not biting my best friend, my best friend's boyfriend, someone who I consider a brother, or my co-worker who I have to work close with every day." Suddenly my head felt a little heavy, and I almost swayed. Oh, yes, I was now tipsy. It had been a while. A hand caught my elbow. Oh, I had swayed. It was Jared's hand. My body automatically reacted, pining for him again, and I found myself automatically clenching my thighs. I had to move away from his touch, and now... I did. But his hand only moved to my back, as if ready and waiting to steady me again if necessary. Making matters a gazillion times worse, he spoke down my ear again, close enough that he was nibbling on it as he spoke. I just about managed to hold back a shudder.
"You've got the Dutch courage now. Shall I go get Max?"
His tongue lightly flicked my earlobe.
"Or are you ready to admit that it's not him you really want?"
Discreetly, his hand teasingly traveled slowly and lightly down to the small of my back, fingers splayed. Oh, God. Another shudder began to crest. I tried holding it back, but a tremor still ventured through me. Jared felt it and chuckled softly. It wasn't so much the contact that was causing the shudders. It was more to do with the fact that it was Jared who was touching me. Desperate for some kind of distraction, I glanced around the club, concentrating on how bright the flashing, colourful lights were, and how drunk humans were prancing about, waiting to be bitten, and how... Oh, my God. The sight my eyes found made my brain fail for a second. My cheeks and hands burned, something they always did when I was irate. My breathing became short pants as I felt the anger swirl around my lungs. The contents of my stomach curdled, and my pulse was practically out of control. Familiar voices were talking to me, but my brain didn't interpret the words. Every part of me was far too fixated on the spectacle before me. Approximately 8 feet away from me, dancing and laughing like he had a right to walk the earth, was someone I never thought I'd see again. Someone I swore to one day find. And now, he had more or less fallen in my lap. At that moment, his eyes found me through his fuzzy, red, unruly hair, as if he'd sensed he was being watched. He tensed, and his eyes widened. Abruptly, he swung his arm in my direction, and a ball of black fire came zooming at me. Without even waiting to see if his aim had been successful, he darted toward the exit. I drew in the energy around me and released a gush of water from my palms to cancel out the black flames. Then I chased after him, ignoring the complaints of the people around me, who were now a bit wet. Outside the club, I halted and scanned the street. The tall, scruffy bugger was zooming past each of the stores with admirable speed. Sucking in more energy, I manipulated it into the form of my whip and cracked it like I'd never cracked it before. It wrapped around his ankle. I yanked the whip hard, dragging him along the pavement and over to me. Looming over him, I tissed. "Throwing fireballs at me? That's not very nice, is it?" He didn't struggle or try to free himself. He just gazed up at me, a mixture of shocked and incredibly anxious. I realized something then. "You thought I was dead, didn't you? I hate to disappoint you, but Victor spared me." "I should have known that this Fente feeder everyone's been talking about was you," he said in a shaky voice. "Yes, you should have. You never were very bright." I became aware that there were crowds of people around. I picked up the scents of Jared, Evan, Chico and Max close behind me. But I didn't care to answer their questions. "Is this where you've been hiding for the past few years then, Clark? Hoping Victor wouldn't still come after you just for the fun of it. Turns out that Victor was the least of your worries, eh? No wonder I couldn't find you. Just how did you get accepted here?"
"My sire got a position as a security guard here. He was permitted to bring along two of his guards."
"And the stupid bastard thought you'd be loyal. Well, I hope he's not going to miss you too much, because your life has now reached its expiry date." Clark held up his hands, palms out.
"Now hang on a minute, Sam. Let's talk about this."
I straightened up and sniggered. "Trying to negotiate? This isn't a hostage situation. It's called retribution."
"Come on now. Killing me won't bring Bryce back."
"Oh, I know that. But it'll feel bloody fantastic." It wouldn't bring me peace, but it was the next best thing. "Just how does it feel to know you're the reason your best mate's dead?"
"He wouldn't want this. He wouldn't want you bitter like this. He loved you. He..."
"Oh, do me a favor and stop with all that." I shook my head, amazed at his nerve. "Do you know what, Clark? I told Bryce not to go to you for help. I told him I didn't trust you. You know what he said to that? He said he'd known you all his years as a vampire, that you were his best mate, and you'd never betray him, and that he trusted you with his life." Clark's face was even paler than before. I doubted I'd ever reach the tiny conscience he had, but he was getting the lecture all the same. Clark was like Victor in many ways. He was good at politics and manipulating people. He would know exactly what you would want to hear, and then he would tell you just that. If you had a compassionate side, he would appeal to it. If you had a weakness, he would pounce on it. If all else failed, he would barter.
"I didn't betray him. It wasn't like that."
"He went to you for help, for someone to hide out for a couple of days, and you handed him and me over to Victor on a silver bloody platter."
"I had no choice. Victor would have killed me if he found out I was hiding you and Bryce."
"Bryce wouldn't have gone to you if he thought you'd have been in danger, because that's the kind of person he was." "Was." I spat the last word. "Now get up." I allowed my whip to fade away, freeing his ankle, and watched as he struggled to get up.
"What are you going to do?"
We're going to duel. There's no sport in just killing you outright.
I can't fight you, Sam, he said, shaking his head.
Why's that?
I can't hurt you. Bryce loved you. I can't hurt you.
The words couldn't have been more false. The people around me sensed that too, a part of my brain registered. I snorted. It wasn't 5 minutes ago that you threw a fireball at me, and then you legged it like a rat up a drainpipe. I think what you really mean is that you don't think you can defeat me, and now you're just saying all this shite in the cause of self-preservation. Well, you're only stalling the inevitable.
Backing up a little, he said, Sam, it won't bring him back.
Yeah, I believe you already said that.
I'll leave here. We don't have to duel. I'll leave the Hollow and I won't come back. You'll never see me again, I swear to you.
I had to laugh as we reached the bartering stage. I know that if I let you walk off now, the second I turn my back, there'll be more fireballs coming at me. He looked exasperated now.
Okay, we duel, Clark finally said, snarling.
His expression was so different now that he had dropped the fake crap. The innocence and fear had vanished from his eyes, only to be replaced by the callousness and spite that usually resided there. Apparently, Clark had no intention of dueling, however. He hadn't even fully turned before he abruptly swerved, hoping to catch me off guard, and launched more deadly fireballs at me. I absorbed the energy of the natural element air, releasing it as a forceful wind that not only sent Clark careening backwards, but sent his pretty fireballs with him. When his back reached the wall of one of the buildings, he fell to the floor. His fireballs then crashed into him, and he disappeared, screaming, in a large ball of black fire. A black fire that was meant for me. Both mine and Clark's suspicions were right. His death hadn't made much difference to how I felt inside. Bryce was still gone. He had still been betrayed, and it still hurt to even think about it. But the whole thing now seemed more balanced. The people responsible for his death weren't living the life that he should have had. Victor had once told me that it wasn't anything personal to Bryce, that he just had to die because he loved me.
Wrong girl, wrong time, Victor had said.
But Bryce had met me and loved me before Victor even knew me. By loving me and wanting to be with me, Bryce had been living exactly as he should have been, and exactly when he should have. It was Victor who had wanted the wrong girl at the wrong time, and it was Clark who had made it possible for Victor to get what he wanted. The memory of Bryce's last seconds flashed in my mind so forcefully that it was almost like being slapped. It was all as clear as if it was happening right that moment. I could perfectly remember his contorted expression, his cries of pain, and the way his eyes had shot me a goodbye glance. A hand gently rested on my shoulder, and I suddenly realized that my name was being softly repeated. The touch, the voice, and the scent alerted me to the fact that it was Jared. And although there were plenty of people around and several of them seemed to be trying to reach me through my days, it was Jared I needed. I turned into him, burying my face in his chest and gripping his shirt. His arms instantly went around me.
"Will you just leave her alone for a minute?" he said to someone.
That someone seemed to persist, and Jared responded with,
"This isn't a game of who can get closest to her. Just give her a minute."
Louder now, that someone persisted. "Max." Jared spoke down my ear.
"Want me to teleport you away from here?"
I nodded against him. There was fluttering in my stomach, and then the ground beneath me was softer. Opening my eyes, I saw that we were standing in the living area of my apartment. But I didn't move away from Jared, and he didn't drop his arms. He didn't ask me questions, which I appreciated. He just let me have a moment to collect myself. After a few minutes, I stepped out of his embrace and, without meeting his gaze, uttered a barely comprehensible, "Thanks." I then headed straight for the refrigerator. Sure, vodka-flavored NST couldn't get me drunk, but the taste would be enough for a little comfort. Jared didn't leave. He followed me into the kitchen and leaned against the counter, mirroring my stance.
"I don't know what to say."
He was speaking softly.
I was going to ask if you're okay, but that would be a stupid question.
I'm fine. Seeing Clark just dragged up a lot of memories, that's all.
Memories of someone called Bryce?
I nodded.
Yep. Who was your boyfriend?
Yep.